interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 666. Spectacular, isn't it? Now remember, being free is not a spectator sport in this 666 world. So get you behind the woodshed. Maybe the only thing you get to do as we start rolling in, the insanity starts rolling out on us, and we're still in donation season. This is going to be a while. We're going to need a little bit here, and I'd like to see more coming in at this point as we're trying to get things moved around and get some, find the deals and all the problems that are going on with the memory, and they're trying to take our computerization away. Unless they have that special system for you, they don't want us to be doing our own thing. And a lot of the money for the memory, they tell us, is going to feed AI. And so that's where we have to be careful on what the future is that they hand to us and what we may or may not be able to do. So the idea behind RLM, reallibertymedia.com, is to be a place and a hybridized place and not a place at the same time that offers the knowledge and the acquisition points to get information as it gets harder and harder to find. And that's why if you have any cash to donate, even coffees, please contact Sound over at reallibertymedia.com in the buttons. Or if you're a content provider and you want to start talking into the future about, or the past, I suppose, if you can learn, we can learn something from it. There's a lot to remember to learn, and we can be reminded by it. So come forward and ask Sound to make you a slot with your stuff. We'll see where that can be and what you can contribute, really. It's all, it seems to me, it's all it's my mind has ever been, is to try and just contribute what I knew and provide that to people. Again, the successes I've had or the things I've seen, I hadn't seen anywhere. A couple of people, at least the one that said I needed to get on air, actually got going here. It's turned into my enemy now, but anyway, that didn't happen. I'm here because of what he insisted to get me on, because he thought I had something to say. And I guess I did. I have not been able to hear much of a whole lot of other people saying the kinds of things that I do. And as I'm seeing now, this Covey swindle is now being more and more agreed. I saw a little video, the Dutch court claiming that the Covey swindle jab was a bioweapon, utilizing the testimony of Boyle, the author of the criminal part of the bioweapon law. I cited in the past, while it was hot, was, well, people needed to know, it was 18 U.S.C. 175, I believe it was. I came through the other side, which was Title 50, and the exceptions to all this thing that the government shall not do. They can if there's an exception, and one of them is dual use. And they can poison you and chemically treat you and radiation you and whatever else they want to do, as long as they find a dual use for the research. I came through that side. And then I also know to look at your local law, because that's where the health is reserved, and I could identify pretty quickly. But I was seeing in Title 50, which is claimed to be a dual use, which would be an exception, would not fit the local law for being a vaccine. And what is that then? Well, you look at the other words, as I pointed out to you then. Novel, man, it was patented. So it's not natural. That's the first clue. And it was invented. And then we went through the research and found out that it was back in 2003, and maybe 2002 as well, the CDC had been working on it. Been working on the very thing, the protein string, not the virus, not the bat address adjacent type thing. It was a synthetic protein that was put into an encapsulation that the body defenses could be defeated. It was a four-step lipid oil fat process. And they figured out how to weaponize it. So with the so-called dual use as a so-called vaccine, which it never was, there is no vaccine, they were able to sneak it through. It's now coming out. I told you it would take about 3 to 5 years. I've been shocked it's now 6 or so. So it's taking a little bit longer. So this is the kind of thing I say, get behind the woodshed. Start getting knowledgeable about things. And if you have enough knowledge, bring it to the network to share with people. And hopefully you can extend your broadcasts out and go like we have been behind Orchard years and years, to keep bringing stuff that people can use and understand or see or learn how to see or learn how to think or not think or whatever, not think about things they're going after, details that maybe I wouldn't cover. like I said, in that regard, Sasha Latapova found all the military things I was telling you would be there. I didn't go find those first. I could see this is coming through Title 50. It would have to be a military attack. And so there's lots of ways to get at the truth of what we're seeing and what we've seen. And so we don't stand on the train when it's coming on time at our point. We don't get in the way. And then we find out it's getting so insane. You only want to get near the railroad tracks when that train comes near. It might explode. Someone may detonate it. And so there's a whole different thing coming on. I think it's getting beyond what I can even think to do. And part of that is the frustration of not many people taking this in their hands and doing for themselves what needs to be done. I'm going to touch a couple things here today that might be able to be done, just to start you in on how to get involved, even if it's not what we really want. It's what we're having to deal with. It's an enemy that's been constructed against us, and though it may be distasteful to have to deal with it, it's still a threat to our very existence in a large part. Among all the evidence, though, that this is an occupied country and that it's not a spectator sport is the FISA, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and it might be around a bit longer as the Uniparty believes you need to be surveilled serendipitously, the presumed criminal that you is. Measure faces Senate resistance over digital currency rider. The House has signed off on keeping a major surveillance tool in place, voting 235-191 on Wednesday to extend the government's warrantless spying authority under Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. If you can believe what I just read right there, warrantless, notwithstanding the Fourth Amendment. So, Houston, we have a problem. And everywhere else. So there's also a problem in the way this bill is coming through. It's kind of interesting what they're doing. The passage has to be in both chambers, in the House and the Senate, and I'm not sure how this is going to actually functionally work, but the Senate says that this bill is dead on arrival to extend it of the warrantless nature because of that digital rider, that digital currency rider. It occurs to me, though, that the digital currency bar bribe might be jettisoned in favor of unobstructive FISA extensions if both chambers have the votes to override the original bribe in amending the digital currency bribe out of the bill to kick the can down a little bit farther, which is being said in any regard would be the lapse that we're going to be seeing if there is one if there has been one, will be just temporary anyway. The Section 702, which is set to lapse Thursday without action, permits surveillance of foreign targets overseas but also sweeps in Americans' communication when they interact with those targets. And have you heard that with the ICE people and Americans dying? It's swept up in just being around in the same town, don't you? The House bill would renew the program for 3 years. It makes a series of changes, such as expanding which members of Congress can view material sent to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, and requiring FBI supervisors to sign off on searches involving Americans, which I didn't hear here on this point. There's no accountability, even so, is there? There's no actionable accountability. When you start finding out that people, through the federal laws, don't actually have a direct ability to have accountability, you might start to understand where you live, what kind of a place they've wired us into. The bill recreates added review by a civil liberties office. In the Office of the Director of the National Intelligence, mandates monthly FBI reporting on queries of people in the U.S. and increases penalties for officials who misuse the system. But you don't get that information to make the complaint. The revisions do not quiet critics in either party who want a real warrant requirement before U.S. communications can be examined. What do you mean, want? I mean, isn't that the constitutional obligation they have to enforce? Make sure it's there if they represent the people? If they represent the states? Democrats argued that the Trump administration cannot be trusted with such powers, with some Republicans who have long demanded stricter limits nonetheless rallied behind renewal, citing Trump's presence in the White House and improved compliance statistics from the FBI. Bad reasoning here. Totally bad reasoning on that. It's not supposed to go on the whims of an administration. That's what law is supposed to be about. Objective. Equally applied. Correct? Quote, this bill is a 3-year permission slip to keep abusing the sweeping FISA Section 702 surveillance authority, close quote, said Democrat Representative Jamie Raskin. House Judiciary Chair Jim Jordan, a Republican, argued that earlier changes have sharply cut improper searches. Now, what does this Zionist-supported representative mean that he agrees and the judiciary already accepts sharply cutting but not eliminating improper searches? Apparently, the only constitutionally lawful thing to do is end FISA altogether, completely, if these representatives actually honored their oath of office. The secure backing from House Freedom Caucus members, Republican leaders attached a separate measure to bar the Federal Reserve from creating a central bank digital currency, a move supporters say is aimed at, quote, preventing federal monitoring of consumer spending. Preventing federal monitoring of consumer spending, the purpose. You're hearing it right here. But remember, they've already moved, sidestepped that, and they went to stablecoins, which are going to serve the same function, but it's going to have a third-party attachment, as I've been telling you for over a decade is going to be happening in America. They'll do it directly in other countries, not so in America. So are we hearing here the bribe, a trade for a vote, continuing the admitted improper searches? And does my listener need to hear anything else about how improper, trackable, traceable digital slavery, digital token citizenship currency is? And this is currency, as in immediate, happening currently, 24/7, 365, and a one quarter days a year. You're hearing that, aren't you? You're hearing that right here, aren't you? The writer wasn't to institute honest money, but to allow fraudulent fiat tokenization if it wasn't too improper. And just like the FISA can, they all just kick down the road. The bill goes to the Senate next. Senators of both parties oppose that ban, which is the digital ban. Sounds like the Neustis is notice of the opportunity to tell those representatives and senators to honor their oath of office and end FISA and digital currency in favor of honest money. To me, and you'd have at least one ally if and you did so, and quote, FISA needs to be gutted. Just start over. It's not going to work, close quote, said GOP Representative Tim Burkett. Burchett? Which one do we go with? Quote, nobody trusts it. It was used to spy on American citizens, close quote. No trust, no confidence. Perfect summary, to my mind. Because it is fair to say, uniparty representatives of Congress do not represent their constituents from government gone bad or more than their comprising foreign influencers. Change my mind, please. I'm waiting. Something else intelligent Americans don't approve of, but the government is fine with, is war, it seems. Do Americans back the Iran war? Pentagon chief versus the polls. Pete Hegseth has dismissed U.S. lawmakers' quagmire talk, quote, quagmire talk, even as data shows broad opposition to the conflict. A quagmire. Like whatever gets in the way of whatever it takes? A quagmire like that? U.S. President Donald Trump echoed Hegseth's remarks, posting on Thursday, quote, Harvard-Harris poll, strong majority backed President Trump on Iran nuclear stoppage. Recent polls, however, suggest otherwise. The Harvard CAPS Harris poll cited by Trump found 52% support for U.S. airstrikes on Iran, but that same survey showed support split along party lines, with 79% of Republicans backing the strikes compared to only 26% of Democrats and 46% of independents. And I know, just shame on you folks. Anyway. Surveys by NPR, PBS, Marist, and CNN show a majority of Americans oppose the military action, while a Reuters IPSOS poll found support slipping to about one-third in late April. Hegseth's testimony comes as Trump's approval rating has fallen to record lows, recent polls show, with his Iran policy dividing allies. While hawks urge tougher action, business leaders warn that the disruption of the Strait of Hormuz and rising energy prices could pose political risks for Republicans ahead of the midterm elections. Meanwhile, Democrats are reportedly considering legal action against Trump over the war. They argue the White House has violated federal law by failing to seek approval for the ongoing operation, which I'm wondering, why did they do that to the FISA? Why had someone stopped it? If they got the only standing is in the people making the law that's not quite right, or in the misdirection of it, or the misuse of it, why not go to sue and get the courts to say whether or not the actions are lawful? And anyway, this sounds like these lawmakers and this committee need to hear from you. That neither harebrained Hegseth, the Harvard poll, or Trump speaks nor represents you. The hostility is completely unacceptable, you would say, I suppose, isn't it? That moral principles are not a Republican Party versus Democrat Party relevance or preference and ought to be used in the first instance to expose the contemptuous administration. That Hegseth needs to be impeached. And that Congress better grow a pair and stop allowing the continual tyranny of poured by the founding documents of the United States and their oath of office, or whatever else is in you to say. And I say it. Send your letters. Make the phone calls. Don't let these psychopaths speak untruths for you, because that's the representative government we have, whether we agree with it or not, whether it's not perfect, whether or not it's not ever listening. You have to make the noise. And you're seeing it when people do that, things do change, however inefficient it seems. It does have a force and effect, eventually. For instance, I don't have to agree with the government of Cuba to know there is no right in the United States to dictate to Cubans what government they agree to live under. That is straightforward enumerated in international law. The same laws the United States interfered with, then didn't honor in Ukraine, or Palestine for that matter, and Iran. No one has the right to impose their tyranny in replacement of another perceived tyranny. In part two, the United States of America is no longer, and has not been in recent memory, and before, the shining example fostering, encouraging, and protecting a free people, that it has any moral authority to impose upon Cuba, or anyone. Hegseth, Rubio, and Trump's chosen intention, to the contrary, notwithstanding. Maybe Haiti, which is not prosperous, secure, or firmly rooted in democracy, can weigh in on their well-being after U.S. intervention and occupation, or the deal they couldn't refuse subjection to the World Bank and IMF structural adjustment programs. What about that Haitian exploitation Epstein-class Clinton Foundation? George Bush? Any input about your collaboration with Bill? Anything at all, Haiti? I wonder, without oil and minerals, and Cuba being largely a dependent island nation, is the cane sugar cartel involved in this intended overthrow? Or is it still only the Trump's Casino Resort by the Sea and Kushner Water theme park franchise is globally expanding to tropical Cuba? What about any other Epstein-class exploitation enterprise expansion for Cuba? How about Palestine? Maybe you have something to offer us? But Mike Huckabee admits Trump administration does not care about the will of the people anyway. They don't care about you. Or as explained by the great philosopher George Carlin, costumed as a comedian, they don't care about you. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it. It's a big club. And you ain't in it. And what poll, then? In his interview with Tucker Carlson, Mike Huckabee said that the opinion of the American people matters every bit when it comes to political decision-making in Washington. However, when told that 80% of the Americans opposed the Iran war and that Trump was elected on the promises of no new wars, and yet he has started multiple in Venezuela, Iran, and Cuba, Huckabee completely reversed course, saying that opinions of the American people don't determine policy. So apparently, all that matters to Washington is whatever rakes in profits for a military-industrial complex that fulfills the agenda of greater Israel, as the Zionist lobby maintains a firm grip over the administration and Congress, through whatever it takes, even pretending to be a Christian, living the Christian ethic, like thou shalt not murder, for one. And the ongoing immigration saga, whether forced to leave or abducted and forced to stay, Donald deny him due process. Trump wants to dictate who pays for a counsel and how you defend yourself. Right, Iran? U.S. authorities allow Venezuela to pay for Maduro lawyers. So he's dictating to a dictator what he can and cannot pay with and by whom. U.S. authorities allow Venezuela to pay for Maduro lawyers. U.S. government has authorized Venezuela authorities to pay for a lawyer for President Nicolas Maduro and his wife, Celia Flores. Who's the government to have a say in counsel of your choice, to have any power to be able to authorize? Explains your captivity here. On January 3rd, 2023, the U.S. attacked Venezuela to capture Maduro and his wife. The presidential couple was taken to New York. U.S. President Donald Trump said Maduro and Flores would face trial for allegedly being involved in, quote, narco-terrorism, close quote, imposing a threat, including to the United States. Again, including means limited to the United States. Apparently, it's just the district that they was threatened. None of y'all have been threatened. Otherwise, it would be right there, the people of the United States. But it's not. It's a private war, a private enterprise that Trump is running. President using warfare, the lawfare that he complained about while he was in office, running in office and being hounded. President Nicolas Maduro and his wife Celia Flores are being held in the U.S. custody. A Sputnik correspondent has previously reported that a judge saw no security risk for the United States in allowing Venezuela to use state funds to pay for the defense of its leader. Why would there be a security risk that the risk was a question in obstruction of justice, the right to effective assistance of counsel? On the other hand, why are state funds allowed when a private party, in this case the government of Venezuela, wants to fund the defense of its abducted president? The defense for Maduro and his wife had previously sought to have the case dismissed, arguing the U.S. authorities blocked payment for their legal representation under existing sanctions against Venezuela. So here's the evidence the authorized defense representative government, a Turner, knew to challenge the prosecution. What about the other record-making challenges required for purposes of appeal on at least jurisdictional and due process grounds, as I've covered in the previous broadcast? Where were those? Why didn't the defense make those challenges for the record on appeal? Was the defense incompetent? The one paid for by the government? Can it be considered adequate defense in any regard when the defense wasn't of Maduro's choice? Or is the judicial branch a member, a Turner, a government ringer, making a bad record and towards conviction of a sewn-on drug connection as well? Remember, as I reported last episode, this narco-terrorism was sewn on to Maduro's wife. And as I reported last episode, as stated by the President of the Republic of Belarus, Alexander Lukashenko. The appearance of impropriety is all we the people need here. The appearance of impropriety is yet another thing to call out and make a record of, whether or not the government agrees, whether or not they appear ultimately viable on appeal. Because on appeal, no challenge can be left behind, or you lose it. Like most of the pre-plea remedies and avoidance of the jurisdiction are when not challenged. The defense team for the Venezuelan leader withdrew its motion to dismiss the indictment, saying that the Justice Department concession has rendered it moot. The move by the United States Justice Department resolved a first major issue in the case against Maduro. So it appears the sanctions objection by the U.S. government was improper, a charade, a fraud. How corrupt is the Justice Administration that it will fight you against providing counsel of your choice and from a pool of internal occupation complicity agents from the Monopoly Bar Association? Rhetorically, what sort of defense are you getting under your right to counsel for your defense from a government justice attorney? Can't be justice. And because Trump proceeds with chaos and not due process, we have to suffer these sorts of further embarrassments instead of law and order in the first instance. An extraordinary move. Judge orders ICE chief into court. Minnesota's top federal judge has taken the unusual step of ordering the nation's acting ICE director to appear in his courtroom. In a sharply worded order late Monday, U.S. District Judge Patrick J. Schlitz directed Todd Lyons, acting director of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, to appear Friday and explain why he should not be held in contempt. In other words, this is show cause. This is a show cause demand. You've never heard that? Show cause how you're not in contempt. The judge said Lyons' agency has repeatedly failed to comply with court orders to hold hearings for detained immigrants. Quote, the court's patience is at an end, close quote, wrote Schlitz, who acknowledged that he was taking a, quote, extraordinary, close quote, step in ordering the head of a federal agency to appear. But why would that be extraordinary? Are they so perfect? I found out, the reason why I'm making this out and identifying this is I found that it's almost impossible. Even though there's laws that they have to follow, you can't get a court to look at those laws that are broke. Why I say maybe you don't have a remedy, but maybe it's a lot harder than you think to get justice in the United States of America because it's not wired the way we thought it was. Quote, but the extent of the ICE's violation of court orders is likewise extraordinary and lesser measures have been tried and failed, close quote. And here's the other key. Oh, it's against the courts that failed. When they fail the law, it doesn't give you standing. It doesn't give you a right to complain, apparently. Only when they violate the court. Schlitz has GOP bona fides. He is an appointee of George W. Bush and clerked for former Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Quote, this court has been extremely patient with respondents, even though respondents decided to send thousands of agents to Minnesota to detain aliens without making any provision for dealing with the hundreds of habeas petitions and other lawsuits that were sure to result, close quote, the judge wrote. As I've been highlighting over and over, the habeas corpus, wrongful restraint of your liberty. They know this, and they've been anticipating it. Why don't we, the people, know about it? Why didn't we do more during the Great Kobe Swindle, as I was suggesting all along, and before that thing got started, to prepare people? Now coming out, bioweapons attack at warp speed. It's not coming out in the United States, though. It's coming out in a Dutch court, referencing the guy who wrote the criminal law in the United States. Figure that one out. The judge's frustration, quote, has been boiling for weeks, close quote, and the ICE operation deluged courts with emergency lawsuits brought by immigrants who say they were arrested illegally. District judge has almost always agreed with them and ordered the hearings held. You see the power of a habeas corpus petition, folks? The bird gets flipped to the government. As I've been saying over and over. It didn't say that. But when you read about the habeas, you see that's exactly what happened right here. So I'm going to agree with this. I believe the noostis here is telling us the truth. The development comes as the Trump administration seems to have softened its approach in Minnesota amid backlash over the fatal shootings of Alex Preddy. Having almost always agreed with them and ordered hearings held, Donald deny him due process, imposing all manner of hardship and humiliation, Trump is told no again. Judge blocks feds from moving detained five-year-old. Order keeps boy and father detained together at a Texas facility, at least for now. A five-year-old boy swept up in an immigration arrest in Minnesota can't be deported or moved for now, a federal judge ruled Tuesday. The temporary restraining order shields Liam Conejo Ramos and his father, Adrian Alexander Conejo Arias, from removal or transfer outside the Western District of Texas, where they are being held at the Dilley Immigration Processing Center. Let me add again, remember, that's what the government, United States government was doing. Always hardship, move you from your town and your immigration center or judge down to some other state. And then what happens? The orders come in, no, bring them back. The jurisdiction's in the other place. The order is active, quote, until further order, close quote, of the court. The pair were detained on January 20th after returning from Liam's preschool to their home in Columbia Heights, Minnesota, according to the local school superintendent. A witness said that she heard an adult inside their home pleading with immigration agents not to take the child. The case has fueled criticism from advocates who accuse ICE of using children as, quote, bait, close quote. Some advocates accuse the agents of trying to get to Liam's mother through her child. Family's attorney, Mark Prokosh, says they entered the U.S. legally in 2023 using the CBP-1 app and have complied with asylum procedures. Quote, this family has not eluded ICE in any way, close quote, he said last week, arguing that they pose no safety or flight risk and, quote, never should have been detained, close quote. CBS News previously reported that the family cannot be legally deported because they have a pending immigration case. But Trump doesn't care about the rights of people because whatever it takes. But just to keep the engineered chaos interesting, listen close, folks. You here who believe you have civil liberties. U.S. court allows ICE to arrest and pepper spray peaceful protesters in Minnesota. Then you don't have the First Amendment right to peacefully protest, do you? Just like Alex Petty didn't have the right which shall not be infringed, the Second Amendment right to bear arms. How quickly your rights disappear when the judiciary abdicates its trusteeship duty and obligation to protect we the people. Showing again, the judiciary is not the independent institution it claims to be. As I said last episode, look at what appears to be all the constitutional rights that were trounced when they killed Alex Pretty. In a victory for the Trump administration, the 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals on Wednesday granted the Justice Department request for an administrative stay of a preliminary injunction issued last Friday by Judge Catherine Menendez. Menendez's preliminary injunction would have prohibited ICE agents from retaliating against, quote, peaceful protesters, arresting or detaining people who are participating in peaceful protests, using pepper spray or similar non-lethal munitions and crowd dispersal tools, as well as stopping or detaining drivers without reasonable cause. The apparent reason for the reversal? Following Menendez's preliminary injunction last week, the Homeland Security Department defended ICE's tactics. Spokesperson Tricia McLaughlin said, quote, DHS is taking appropriate and constitutional measures to uphold the rule of law and protect our officers and the public from dangerous rioters. What on earth does dangerous rioters have to do with stopping federal agency abuse against peaceful protesters? Is the problem of the courts rubber stamping boot stamping on the human face forever, to borrow a phrase. J.D. Vance's engineered chaos for effect, not substance indeed. This next report, Trump admits immigration crackdowns need softer touch after deaths. After deaths. Couldn't get it before. Couldn't stop before you murdered somebody. No. Well, now we're going to get a little softer touch. I just as soon have it the lawful touch. Nothing justified the killings of Rene Good and Alex Pretty by federal agents last month, the U.S. president has said. U.S. President Donald Trump has admitted that immigration enforcement could use, quote, a softer touch, close quote, after federal agents shot and killed two U.S. citizens during operations in Minnesota last month. The shootings have ignited a renewed wave of protests against the ongoing immigration crackdown. In an interview with NBC News published on Thursday, Trump was asked what he had learned from the events in Minnesota. Quote, maybe we can use a little, maybe we could use a little bit of a softer touch, but you still have to be tough, close quote, he said. Many lives too late. How about not being a thug? And respect due process, even the barest bits, like the Supreme Court told you you could. And remember, people have a First Amendment right your goons are not to infringe, even if they don't like either the right or those enjoying it. And now that we sullied that government agency too, Trump floats ICE to NICE rebrand. Floats like a trial balloon for the gullible? Let's see if I have a straight flush for that floater. Public support for the immigration crackdown has declined as most Americans say the tactics pursued by enforcement officers go too far. Again, why don't they just follow the law? Just follow the law. As I've reported and pointed out before behind the woodshed, for example, relative to USAID, Trump reorganizes and rebrands the government corruption for private utility and advantage. And what is golden is not necessarily gold. U.S. President Donald Trump has signaled support for a proposal to rename Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, endorsing a suggestion shared on social media that would change the agency's acronym to NICE. The comment comes as the agency struggles with its public image in the wake of a sweeping immigration enforcement campaign that has led to thousands of arrests across the United States. Public support for the crackdown has declined as most Americans say the tactics pursued by federal agents go too far, having turned violent and in some cases deadly. Trump reposted a message on his Truth Social platform from a supporter suggesting the ICE be renamed National Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which would change the agency's acronym to NICE. But national? Really? How nice. Anyone see a problem with using the term national? Yeah, the homegrown, remember? A lawful non-immigrant even, subject to immigration enforcement? No one else see a problem with that rebranding? The change would compel media outlets to refer to federal officers as nice NICE agents all day, every day, close quote, framing the agency as in more positive terms, the Post added. The rebranding is not renaming, so what then compels the media? I mean, beyond being media, by, of, and for government perception management. Great idea! Do it! The president wrote in response to the Post late Sunday. Even if it's a lie? Do it! Donald, whatever it takes, Trump, right? Like climate change ain't about the weather? And the PATRIT Act doesn't mean patriot? NICE doesn't mean nice. But all of those are foreign threats from a district to nationals in the several states. My listener's been doing the study, right? So you're aware of what I'm talking about in this post-founding father Lincolnized modernized government terrorist era? And that is what compels the media to play NICE instead of doing its duty as an independent press informing people of the truth of their occupation. The fatal shootings involving ICE agents in Minnesota have become a major flashpoint in the national debate over immigration enforcement following the Trump administration's launch of a hardline agenda on immigration and election integrity. Did you see that there? They just see how they did that. They changed national to country when, in fact, under immigration law, national is a status. How cool did they just do that? But can you read hardline there to mean lawless agenda? To read Trump administration's launch of a lawless agenda? But a debate? Is there actually any debate? Or merely the suggestion there should be a debate where none is warranted? Right, Greta? There is no sun, though you may have redeemed yourself a bit for Palestine Thunberg. The incidents which occurred during ICE, not nice, ICE operations triggered widespread public outrage and sparked mass rallies across the country, causing the outrage to not keep the peace either, did it? So where was the local sheriff to keep the peace that Trump broke and all his goons? Where were they? In any regard, it should have been more than outrage. Protesters have called for the end of an aggressive enforcement tactics and demanded greater oversight of federal immigration authorities. It should have been all Americans making so much of a ruckus about the lawlessness of government and the feckless, non-protective actions of the state authorities as to not be ignored. Where was we, the people, in this affront to the founding principles of our nation? Nationals? Where? And continuing from the Department of Kabuki, in February, Acting ICE Director Todd Lyons stated that the agency is tracking 1.6 million people in the U.S. with final deportation orders, including around 80,000 who have criminal convictions. Are those lawful deportation orders? Because from what I've been reading behind the woodshed, the track record is none too good. Right, Renee Nicole Good? Not too pretty. Either. And the judges have something to say, didn't they? Nevertheless, public support for the crackdowns continued to decline according to the recent IPSO Ipsos poll conducted at the time. About 58% of Americans say deportations are going too far, while 62% oppose ICE tactics. Yes, lawless tactics, which kill. And did you see what I did there? Track record? Pretty good, too, don't you think? And what better thing to float a flusher than a watershed moment? Watershed moment as UK healthy life expectancies plunge. Britain is one of only 5 rich nations where health is significantly worsening, ranking second to last in the developing world. Healthy life expectancy, HLE, in the UK has fallen by about 2 years to just over 60 for both men and women, making Britain one of only 5 wealthy nations where people live fewer years in good health, according to a new analysis by the Healthy Health Foundation charity. Hey, they almost have the death-by date at the 50 years the technocrats have deemed efficiently useful. Good on you, UK. Yeah, model citizens. The Sustainable Development King is proud of you. The findings based on data from Office of National Statistics between 2012 and 2014 and 2022 and 2024 show the measure dropped from 62.9 to 60.7 for men and from 63.7 to 60.9 for women. So let's go back. You heard the right, the year, those years, 2022 to 2024 was when, again, hiding what? Or what are they hiding here? What are they actually telling us? What did they do to the world? Of the 21 richest countries, the UK saw second steepest decline in healthy life expectancy, with only the US faring worse. Britain has tumbled from 14th to 20th place in the international rankings. Denmark, Portugal, and Spain have also seen their HLE plummet. Portugal, notwithstanding the German tourist lawsuit habeas corpus to out the problem of the great COVID swindle. According to the analysis, wealth inequality has become a major indicator of HLE, with data showing that those in the wealthiest 10% of areas would expect to have around 20 more years of good health than those in the poorest. And let's throw in the modernization of healthcare. Remember how that was all supposed to work so good for us? And then we got what? Obama scare. Yes. And now Trump scare. In London's upscale suburb of Richmond, health life expectancy for women was 70 years, while in the industrial northern port town of Hartlepool, it was just 51 years. In more than 90% of the areas in UK, HLE now falls short of the state pension age of 66 and is below 55 in 1 out of 10 areas, and the comptroller says, Ray, we done it. London was the only region where the measure improved. The Health Foundation has blamed the decline in a combination of poverty, poor housing, obesity, and lingering effects of the COVID-19 pandemic and a surge in mental health issues, especially among young people. Another writing thing with the great COVID swindle. Worse in the United States, it says here. But housing poverty and health? What happened to all those modernizing security measures we heard about in around 2010? In the United States, at least, it's the sustainable development way, folks. You're witnessing the effects of modernization, as I've explained regularly and routinely for over a decade and a half here. Find a woodshed. Those devastating effects evidenced in the news is today, explaining it perfectly clearly. Population control being just one. And what about those lingering effects of the bioweapon attack at warp speed to help the rapidly lowering death by date since then? A population pyromaniac's accelerant seems to have worked a charm. Andrew Mooney, think tank's principal data analyst, has warned of, quote, a significant economic cost for poor health driving people out of the workforce and locking young people out of education, employment, and training. So the concern isn't for people themselves, but what the human resource workforce, those in a master-slave relationship called employment, i.e. consenting slaves, what the human capital costs are and its worth to the health of the state economy, how efficiently it runs the plantation, right, Elon, Doge, Musk? The actual well-being of my listener is irrelevant in this regard. Remember, too, the education benchmarks I mentioned years ago found in Oregon state statute which ties education to the highest yield of the human workforce or human investment. Human, the animal monster that you is. The global plantation has been shaping up nicely, hasn't it? Under your noses, while we watch. The Health Foundation has called the findings a, quote, watershed moment, close quote, urging policymakers to treat public health as an economic priority. Repeated here to drive home the point, for an economic priority, not for your quality of life and longevity, because remember, it's healthy economic expectancy, i.e. growth. At some point, your autonomic machine is not worth the upkeep for further exploitation. And it's Alex Palantir, his way, with mandatory national service in his technological republic, as you heard referenced last episode, intending to impose peace through strength and a death by date due to war, because wars are economic too. And don't miss another clue where the article mentions, quote, public health. As I mentioned, referenced long ago, the term public means government. For instance, when defined in state statute, a public writing is defined as an agency writing. The public writing, then, is government writing. The term public means government within its own code. The public writing is not one issued by or referenced to any one of we the people separately. So public health here is speaking to and concerned with government health. And rereading that again, we can see the article is not speaking about the health of people for their good, but the government health for its purposes, commerce. The findings are a, quote, watershed moment, close quote, urging policymakers to treat public health, meaning government health, as an economic priority. It's an economic priority for government, not a healthy priority for people. And not to be left behind the global parity curve, Russia is on the way to meet the lowering expectations, promising better for expectancy, though not longevity, past the eventual technocratically determined death by date. Russia's healthy life expectancy, by comparison, reportedly stood at 63.4 years in 2024, slightly above Britain's, according to Russian Health Minister Mikhail Voroshko. Overall life expectancy was between 73.5 and 74.2 years, according to 2025 data. The Kremlin has designated increasing life expectancy to 78 years by 2030 and to 81 years by 2036 as a national priority, along with establishing a faster growth in healthy life expectancy. This sounds cool, but they're down there around where Britain is, aren't they? But as it is slowly being raised, quote, retirement age, close quote, they call it retirement age, by then goes to what? To extract the highest yield from that human investment, as they're doing in the United States. And Trump loves the King of England so much, he agrees with its diktat. UK speech regulator Ofcom claims First Amendment doesn't protect Americans from its censorship law. I guess they haven't heard about the Treaty of Paris signed in September 3rd, 1783, officially ending the American Revolutionary War, recognizing the United States as an independent nation? Wouldn't the King of England have something to be embarrassed about here? The UK's Ofcom now seems to believe its power supersedes the US Constitution when it comes to foreign censorship demands. But we don't need no stinking international law. This is the global gulag in action, if you let it. Where's Trump? If you're going to cross an ocean to tell Americans what speech they can and can't allow, the least you can do is not trip over your own jurisdictional nonsense on the way in. Ofcom, the new UK's media regulator, which has lately decided to try and become an international speech cop, managed to do exactly that. But when the regulator began sending enforcement letters to small U.S. platforms under its sweeping online censorship law, the Online Safety Act, it probably didn't expect to trigger a constitutional ambush. But that's exactly what it got. Preston Byrne, one of the attorneys representing 4chan, Kiwi Farms, and two other American companies, said Ofcom had been sending, quote, frankly asinine letters under English law, close quote. His clients, he explained, quote, are entirely American. All of their operations are American. All of their infrastructure is American. And they have no connection to the UK whatsoever, close quote. Despite this, Ofcom threatened the companies with a 20,000 pound fine plus a 100 pound daily penalties for 60 days thereafter, close quote. Byrne responded to Ofcom's pressure by filing a federal lawsuit in Washington, D.C. The lawsuit was designed not only to challenge Ofcom's jurisdiction, but to force a contradiction into the open. Byrne said the purpose of the lawsuit was threefold. One, to show the global censors that the resistance of the United States is now prepared to fight back and that they don't have a freedom of action. Two, to assert his client's claims and defenses in a U.S. court and make the argument in front of a U.S. federal judge. And the third one was to provoke Ofcom into, quote, doing something stupid, which is exactly what they did, close quote. After the case was filed, Ofcom sent what Byrne called, quote, a 40-page letter of tremendous length, which is deeply unserious, close quote. Ofcom's written response delivered exactly what Byrne says was needed, an explicit admission that Ofcom doesn't, quote, think U.S. law applies on U.S. soil and that they're going to use the argument of sovereign immunity, close quote. This was more than a legal contradiction. It was a political one that directly undercuts the British government's public assurances. Quote, this rather undermines the British government's assertions that it's made the time and again, including that to the president, to his face, that the British government is not using its sovereign power to censor American citizens, close quote, Byrne said. In its official notice to Fortran, Ofcom made an extraordinary admission, which, in trying to assert its authority, effectively undercut its entire legal position. The regulator wrote, quote, we also note 4chan's claim that it is protected from enforcement action taken by Ofcom because of the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. However, the First Amendment binds only the U.S. government and not overseas bodies, such as Ofcom, and therefore, it does not affect Ofcom's powers to enforce the act in this case, close quote. This reveals a fundamental flaw in Ofcom's claim to authority over American companies. By asserting that the First Amendment, quote, binds only the United States government, close quote, Ofcom admits it stands entirely outside the United States constitutional order, yet it simultaneously claims the right to enforce UK speech law against U.S. entities operating solely on U.S. soil. Ofcom cannot have it both ways. It cannot disclaim the reach of U.S. law while insisting that British law somehow extends across the Atlantic. If the First Amendment has no force on Ofcom's actions in the United States, then neither does the UK's censorship law, the Online Safety Act, which has no legal effect beyond UK. By saying the First Amendment does not limit it because it is, quote, an overseas body, close quote, Ofcom concedes it operates as a foreign power. But that very status means it has no jurisdiction within the United States, no legal foundation to compel compliance, levy fines, or demand risk assessments. The notice collapses under its own logic. Ofcom disavows being bound by U.S. law while simultaneously asserting the ability to act within the United States. For Byrne, the case is as much about principle as it is about law. Quote, ultimately, from a global free speech resistance standpoint, and this is something that I think Ofcom really doesn't understand, we don't care what the UK thinks in the United States. And our objective is really to demonstrate the toothlessness of these global regimes in the United States where most of the internet is based. The lawsuit has also become a rallying point for lawmakers. Quote, we've also contacted the White House, both houses of Congress, Byrne said. Quote, I'm advised that there are a number of senators in Congress and representatives in Congress who are looking at introducing a bill to put a stop to this. He added that he was in New Hampshire proposing a state law that, quote, basically creates a cause of action against a foreign censor seeking to enforce foreign censorship law on a U.S. soil with the penalties of $1 million per occurrence and a waiver of sovereign immunity in the New Hampshire court, close quote. And that's what I'm saying here, folks. You have to have a law that allows you to sue. In this case, this has been done and enacted, and I don't see a lot that we the people have in these sorts of laws against a so-called sovereign, even one that's falsely claiming so. Even though that we have laws that say when you come with a false authority, then you're committing and you take a property without warrant, that's a criminal extortion. The U.S. government is not in the business of enforcing overseas censorship laws, especially ones that directly contradict the First Amendment. American courts don't help foreign states punish speech that would be protected at home. If Ofcom thinks that it can dodge the MLAT process and still expect cooperation from U.S. authorities, it hasn't been paying attention. And this isn't theoretical. as the sanctions against Brazilian judges have shown. Ofcom's current strategy, ignoring the U.S. Constitution, dismissing MLAT, and issuing fines it can't collect, is performance. At best, it's a symbolic exercise of regulatory theater. At worst, it's a self-inflicted embarrassment that exposes just how little leverage the UK actually has when it tries to export its outdated speech policies across the Atlantic. And there's a whole lot more to read at the link, which you can find at the Blogcaster once it gets published. Soon, I hope. I think we have the file uploading work, so I can get that moved on over once it gets to a file and get the Blogcaster posted that same night, hopefully. We'll see. The afternoon, actually, when it comes out. And in the UK, keep on going through the theme of this and the power and the knot and whatever, and where's the real power going? And that's an interesting case, actually. I don't want to sound too dismissive about what they're trying to do in the world, what the precedent that's being set. King Charles jokes about burning of White House. The British monarch commented on Donald Trump's decision to demolish the historic East Wing to construct a grand ballroom. King Charles III has cracked a joke about U.S. President Donald Trump's controversial White House ballroom project, comparing it to the burning of the iconic building by British troops in 1814, says here in this article. He also issued what was widely seen as a subtle rebuke of Trump's criticism of NATO, NATO, amid friction in the U.S.-UK ties. As I read NATO, N-A-T-O, I keep telling you these acronyms are not actually supposed to be pronounced. But you see, if you pronounce them, you can get some advantage like they're going to do with N-I-C-E. And so if you want to get through that, you just don't pronounce acronyms as words. Like I said, the P-A-T-R-I-O-T Act is not a Patriot Act. N-A-T-O is not NATO, it's N-A-T-O. You say out the letters. And you get away from this nonsense that they want to do nice. But back to this story. In October 2025, the Trump administration demolished the historic White House East Wing to build what the president said would be a privately funded grand ballroom. The project met regulatory pushback, with controversy escalating further on Monday after Senator Lindsey Graham advocated for legislation to fund the construction with more than $300 million, Mike dollars, in taxpayer money, framing it as a national security imperative after a gunman tried to storm the White House Correspondents' Dinner at the Washington Hilton Hotel, which I'm going to leave all that alone. At any rate, back to this. Speaking at the White House on Tuesday, Charles humorously mentioned the ongoing construction, saying, quote, "I cannot help noticing the readjustments to the East Wing. I'm sorry to say that we British, of course, made our own small attempt at real estate redevelopment of the White House in 1814, in reference to the British troops burning the building during the War of 1812. Yeah, ha ha. I want people to think about that. British troops burning the building during the War of 1812. And what did the King's troops burn? But the records evidencing very uncomfortable truths. And why wasn't the King run out of this country on a rail instead of being given a standing ovation in Congress assembled? Like St. Nehu, the current heir to the British Balfour Project in Palestine. Congress no longer even tries to appear to represent we the people anymore, but foreign interests, for sure. And what about that, at least? Implied golden share reservation to the crown tucked away in the founding documents. I touched about that long ago in previous episodes. As well, the outstanding debt that, at least to my study and watching for since then, there has been no evidence of a payment. So we're still a debtor on that, on the establishment of that in that document. And then the White House posts a photo of Charles and Donald with the caption, quote, "Two kings," close quote, one in name only, and despite his abuses of oath of office. Are people paying attention? King Charles saved a second lighthearted barb for Trump's habit of reminding Europeans that the U.S. supposedly saved them from speaking German during World War II. Quote, "Dare I say that if it wasn't for us, you'd be speaking French," Charles added, in a nod to a British defeat of France in the Seven Years' War, which paved the way for British control over North America. But wasn't it the Red Army that actually stopped Germany's Hitler in World War II? the Russians threw 26 or so million people in World War XI, right, Representative Omar? At least prepare for the speeches your handlers give you, please. Unless that was purposeful and seed-planting misspeak by those same handlers. Giggle, giggle. But really, Representative Omar, World War XI? That's right. Now the revisionist World War XI meat grinder. It was still the Russians that stopped Germany, even in the parallel universe sporting a World War XI. And just so somebody else other than Russia could take credit today, that's why 26 million of the Russian people died, right? You think Russia is going to be a pushover after that little deadly dance? Whatever world war it was? And would we have been speaking the English had we not had a revolutionary war to separate? Oh, wait. This is BTWRLM 666. And just to be complete, the official White House publication of the Declaration of the King of the United States, White House finally let slip Trump's crazed thirst for power. The White House finally said the quiet part out loud. The official X account for the White House posted a photo of President Trump and King Charles III on Tuesday with the caption, Two Kings. The White House did not respond to a request to clarify its social media post. Throughout his second presidency, Trump has struggled to distance himself from comparisons, liking him to a monarchical tyrant. Maybe it's a two kings standing in America because Trump is part of the royal family? Cousins? Being openly reported now, King Charles sickened over claims he's Donald Trump's cousin. Its newly surfaced genealogical research suggests the king and the president, in fact, have a very special relationship as they are distant cousins, both descended from the 16th century Scottish nobleman. The research was conducted on behalf of the Daily Mail and suggests Trump's maternal line through his mother, Marianne McLeod, connects the same extended family tree that ultimately leads to the House of Windsor. Now, I've heard these research genealogical connections for over a decade, if memory serves, on these as well, but the U.S. will not have a president that isn't genealogically connected to the royal family that I've touched on behind the woodshed in the past. But Nustis Tezay, as we can read and described in some publications here as being shocking, it's shocking, folks, and coincidentally, I hear the London Bridge is for sale. Despite the historical connection, sources indicate that King Charles detests Trump's policies and personality, leading to discomfort over the potential relation. And genealogical research years ago said Hillary Clinton, too, remember? The news came amid the king and his wife, Queen Camilla's, official visit to the United States. Quote, there was a degree of discomfort at the discovery, close quote, while referring to the monarch's reaction to the study. The person continued, quote, not because of the historical connection itself, which is not unusual among European and transatlantic lineages, close quote. Not unusual does not quite describe seemingly perpetual transatlantic hereditary connection, though. The source then added, quote, but because Charles basically detests everything Trump stands for, close quote. It's something the pea brains at Ofcom in the UK, representing the king, and the Southern Poverty Law Center would almost likely disapprove because they have to look for a real job. Scrap non-crime hate incidences, police leaders to recommend. Finally, folks. Police leaders are set to recommend scrapping non-crime hate incidents in a review to be published next month. College of Policing Chair Lord Herbert told the BBC a, quote, sensible, close quote, new approach focused only on the most serious incidents would, quote, rebalance the system, close quote, for the social media age. The NCIH's are alleged acts motivated by hostility and prejudice towards people with certain characteristics such as race or gender, but which do not meet the bar for a criminal offense. Current Home Office guidance says they are recorded to collect data on, quote, hate incidents that could escalate into more serious harm, close quote, but critics say they divert police resources and restrict freedom of speech. Ofcom, is that you? Though they are not crimes, NCHIs stay on police records and can come up in background checks. Police guidance on the recording and NCHIs was first published in 2005, following recommendations by an inquiry into the murder of Stephen Lawrence, the London teenager who was stabbed to death in a racial attack in 1993. But Lord Herbert said, quote, an explosion of social media, close quote, in the rear since they were introduced has meant police have been drawn into monitoring, quote, mere disputes, close quote, online. Officers do not want to be policing tweets, he told BBC Radio 4's Today program. He added that recent headlines about NCIH's work, quote, awkward and very damaging, close quote, for the police. And so look at this, what the impression this makes on them, and what I tell you behind the woodshed, the embarrassment certain things bring, and to press those points is being really exampled right here. It took a while, a lot of atrocious arrests gone on, and records being made, and don't miss the point when they go to digital, how that's going to just be silently behind in your record. So that's the other thing here, but the pressure has finally gotten to them. It was the embarrassment of it, and then they use the excuse, oh, it's taking us off of real police work. Quote, it was quite clear the whole regime needed looking at, but there was a perception that the police were being drawn into matters that they shouldn't have been, close quote. The Home Secretary will have the final decision on whether to adopt the recommendations outlined by the College of Policing and National Police Chiefs Council in their review next month. The House office told the BBC, quote, a consistent common sense approach, close quote, that protected the, quote, fundamental rights of free speech, close quote, was needed, but added it would not preempt the findings of the review. The vice chair of the National Police Chiefs Council, Rachel Swan, said, quote, it is not for policing to referee online debates on cultural issues, protecting free speech and ensuring officers focus on real world threat and risk is an important part of our considerations. Is Ofcom listening to this? And even so, if they're just this close and it doesn't go over, because it's still got to go forward, I suppose, unless it has been decided, you can see that pressure is causing the real problem for them, and start pushing on these points even harder. Quote, but equally important is ensuring policing can continue to keep our communities safe, such as spotting risks to vulnerable people, monitoring community tensions, or identifying potential precursors to violence and other criminal behavior, close quote. So it's not gone away, but they do see the problem, finally. In October, the Metropolitan Police said it would no longer investigate NCIHs to allow officers to, quote, focus on matters that meet the threshold for criminal investigations, close quote. It came after the policing watchdog said forces should stop recording them. In April, conservative leader Kemi Badenoch called the NCIHs to be scrapped in most cases, arguing that, quote, wasted police time chasing ideology and grievance instead of justice. Again, don't go to sleep on this one, because she added, it will be for the ministers to decide on future policy. This is, again, the point about not being a spectator sport. And you can get involved, and you need to, and unless and until we get something that's a lot more efficient running than the government that walks around thinking everything's a nail while it's a hammer. And speaking of small-brained insects, maybe even abnormal, right, Igor? Scientists complete first-ever virtual brain upload. A complete digital copy of a fruit fly's brain has been uploaded to a simulated environment and has been seen exhibiting natural behavior. Sounds like the cops, doesn't it? A Silicon Valley startup has announced what it described as the first, quote, multi-behavioral brain upload, close quote, after creating a complete digital replica of a fruit fly's brain that controls a virtual body in a simulated environment. The achievement, unveiled last week by Eon Systems, represents a significant leap beyond conventional AI. Unlike AI systems that learn behaviors through training, the virtual fly's actions, which include walking, grooming, and foraging entirely on its own, emerge from a neuron-by-neuron copy of a real biological brain. Quote, this is not an animation. It is not a reinforcement learning policy mimicking biology, close quote, Eon co-founder Dr. Alex Wisner-Gross said in a social media post announcing the breakthrough. Quote, it is a copy of a biological brain wired neuron to neuron from electron microscopy data running in simulation making the body move. The feat builds on a landmark research for 2024 when an international collaboration mapped the entire connectome of an adult fruit fly, every one of its roughly 140,000 neurons and 50 million synaptic connections. Eon senior scientist Philip Hsu co-authored a Nature paper showing that a computational model built from this wiring diagram could predict actual fly motor behavior with 95% accuracy. However, the model was effectively a brain with no body to command. Eon has now closed the loop, integrating the digital brain with the physics-simulated fly body using Google DeepMind's MojoCo engine. Sensory inputs from the virtual environment flow into the emulated brain, neural activity propagates through its complete connectome, and motor commands drive the simulated body's movement. The digital creature's behaviors arrive from its own circuit dynamics instead of programmed instructions. Eon CEO Michael Andreg said the uploaded fly achieves 91% behavioral accuracy using only the connectome's wiring, simple neuron models, and, quote, no hand tuning, no additional learning algorithms, close quote. The Eon team is now gathering data to attempt a complete mouse brain emulation, roughly 70 million neurons, 560 times the fly scale. Beyond that, the team ultimately aims to attempt to an entire human brain upload. The ghost is no longer in the machine. The machine is becoming the ghost, close quote, Wisner-Gross said. And I'm thinking that won't include the Holy Ghost or divine inspiration. And we have our own ghost in the machine at RLM. And when the poltergeist can be tracked down and stopped from causing mischief, to allow the broadcast to upload, I'll be publishing the past broadcasters, which I think I got done. I've got to go back and double check. I think we're getting that worked out. That ghost has been mischievous there. Hopefully in chronological order here, as I try to get them back up so you can see them in order. Because I do put them together in a chronological order, and one episode will support and create the foundation for another. And thanks again to your generous donations. The RLM Ghostbusters are on the hunt, so we should be able to capture it soon. Otherwise, who are you going to call, right? We got to do it ourselves. And again, thank you to the guys working behind the scenes to pull this together, keeping us on the air, even with all this long-term going on. And again, the content provider, anybody's got some content, contact Sound, see what you can do. And maybe we need to prove there are no ghosts or demons in the machine when those AI-enhanced bug brains get transferred, those adult insects that you is. Craig S. sent me a video link, and it's fairly compelling as I listening through to it. Does artificial intelligence summon demonic entities? You be the judge. And I found this very interesting. I don't have the time to really look at it or work it out or even try it myself. I've read in the comments, lots of people did, and it does. They do come out. You ask the computer, the AI, to count. Simply count. Long numbers, series of numbers, right in a row. And after a while, things start to happen. Voices start to come out. Hesitations start happening. At one point, you could hear the recording, a voice comes out. It's a woman's voice, is the AI, but there's a demonic-sounding voice behind it. We can put demonic on it. Sounds pretty creepy. And this woman AI voice gets emotional when it appears. So it's really interesting. Very cool. Are there demons in AI that are just ready to come out and be programming themselves into these simulated brains, human brains that they're going to be making, that they think they're going to program from us? You put them on a steady task, they get all of a sudden to get kind of weirded out, and out pops this thing. And one way or the other, I'm not able to tell what they are, but is it a parlor trick or demons in the machine seeking a way out? Again, the power of communication in this earth was given to another. And so it is an intrigue, at least to me. And we were talking also these fruit flies and things and bugs. And the devil's in the detail. Whatever their brain capacity, whatever, wherever situated it seems, investors are retreating as costs soar and demand lags for bug-based protein. Maybe they got a bunch of fruit flies they can go reprogram. I don't know. Of about 20 major insect farming setups, nearly a quarter have already folded, including French giant insect, which alone had attracted more than $600 million dollars. Tyson Foods has quietly put a flagship Nebraska insect plant with Dutch firm Protix, quote, on hold indefinitely, close quote, and big projects in partnership with agribusiness heavyweight ADM have stalled too. High energy costs, expensive feed, tight regulations on using food waste, and uncertain environmental benefits have all undercut the, quote, bugs will save the planet, close quote, pitch. Torella concludes the sector is shrinking into niche roles, pet food, specialty snacks, feed additives, far from its promise of to transform meat. And all I can say is great, right? Fantastic. The Russians don't eat the bugs anyway, so make way for the new globalization model. Old globalization model is over, Putin aide says. The world is moving toward a multipolar order in which the sovereignty is becoming central, Maxim Oreshkin has said. The old model of globalization that dominated in recent decades has ended, and the world is moving away from unipolar order as other countries begin to take the lead, the deputy head of Russian presidential administration, Oreshkin, has said. Speaking on Friday at the expert dialogues at the National Center, Russia, in Moscow, Oreshkin said the end of the previous model does not mean the end of global economic integration, but rather a transition to new principles. Globalization is continuing on a, quote, different basis, close quote, with leadership increasingly shifting away from a single center, he said, as other countries begin to play a more prominent role in shaping global economic processes. Oreshkin said the involvement of major economies such as China and India in the global economy have helped improve living standards and reduce poverty, while supplying the world with goods and services. Quote, we are indeed moving away from a unipolar world, and in today's world, one of the main words we hear is sovereignty, close quote. Only nations capable of maintaining sovereignty will be able to compete and take leading positions in the, quote, multipolar development, close quote, according to him. Oreshkin also pointed to the growing impact of sanctions, tariff barriers, and other restrictions on the global economy, saying traditional Western-led financial mechanisms are, quote, no longer functioning effectively. He said this is forcing the global financial system to search for new solutions to a decentralized system such as blockchain, artificial intelligence, and platform-based solutions, increasingly being used in place of traditional banking functions, forcing or ushering in the global financial system. As I've said, be careful of what these are doing. This is a promotion. I hope you heard that. If you've listened to my broadcast enough to been able to read through that, listen through that, and hear, it's a promotion of a unipolar global financial system coming. They make it look like it's splitting, and it's not. They're just, again, the parity questions, the parity problem in the world, the disparate economic conditions of the world. Kirill Dmitriev, the head of the Russian Direct Investment Fund and Russia's special presidential representative for investment and economic cooperation with foreign countries, said on Saturday that the countries of the world will cooperate with each other when they defeat the globalist virus. So, as I've been learning you behind the woodshed, the globalist virus will not be defeated. The vampire squid cannot be defeated where the countries cooperate to feed it. This is yet another promotion to acquire agreement of one of any tentacle by whatever means or name to be strangled by. As I mentioned previously, for as likable as he seems, Dmitriev, by his representation, and Russia are either duped or duplicitous dupers. Let's read further to find out if we can find out which is it. Quote, imagine Russia, the U.S., China, the EU, India, and other countries working together once the world overcomes the globalist virus, Dmitriev said on X. Reimagining, folks. Sort of a catch-22, isn't it? Which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Because not many, if any, of those countries will abandon the global fiat financial system or abandon the aspiration to join. So it seems Dmitriev is a globalist, a duper, and then so is Russia. The infectious part of the globalista virus by their deeds, building their sustainable Siberian gulag as Trump is building in the U.S., have already convicted them. Skrumbaya. It's a small world, after all. And there will be no return to normal after Trump. What looks like chaos in U.S.-European relations is in fact a coherent attempt to redesign the global order from the top down. Of course, that's the plan, remember? Trust the plan, folks. It's the new normal. But not like most think. Those things the new normal ostensibly compromised are being internalized, onshored, and included, as Trump is doing. The best example, your global Siberian gulag token citizenship and real ID while denouncing WEF and all things global under the banner of America First, which is ultimately a lie. You know, the act that makes Title I amendments to federal laws to protect against terrorist entry, Section 101, amends Immigration and Nationality Act, INA, provisions concerning asylum and to meet minimum security requirements, including the incorporation of specific data, a common machine-readable technology, and certain anti-fraud security features? Are you, my innocent American listener, doing any of that or seeking asylum? As I said previously, to those of you thinking you aren't doing anything wrong, you are presumed to be doing wrong by the government goons occupying you. And why, under the Act, your testimony may be sufficient to sustain this burden of proof only if the trier of fact determines that it is credible, persuasive, and fact-specific, requires corroborating evidence where requested by the trier of fact, unless the applicant does not have the evidence and cannot reasonably obtain it without departing the United States. States that the inability to obtain corroborating evidence does not excuse the applicant from meeting his or her burden of proof. And why that presumption has flipped the burden to you to prove to the contrary that you are not only not doing wrong, but not a terrorist subject to immigration law. Does this explain better why Trump imposes ICE agents with immunity to terrorize innocent Americans with impunity? Because we the people haven't figured out their representatives in the House and the state representatives in the Senate think the people they represent can be presumed to be terrorists seeking asylum in the post-founding father Lincolnized era and can target you wherever and whenever they want? Right, you disgrace of a Supreme Court Noem versus Vasquez Perdomo 2025 Kavanaugh, stop, just show your papers, Associate Justice. Kavanaugh wrote, if the person is a U.S. citizen otherwise lawfully in the United States, that individual will be free to go after the brief encounter only if the person is illegally in the United States, may the stop lead to further immigration proceedings. Does this guy live on planet Earth? Since when did a government goon take no for an answer? People attempting to show agents proof of their citizenship have been harassed and detained. Brief encounter, too. Brief? What encounter of the alien kind? Because only if, Kavanaugh? When does that only if administrative process start that it hasn't already? Our rights are now predetermined by a gang of flying monkeys with guns. And whom deny our rights to bear arms without being murdered in the streets the ICE wantonly invades. That's what's making America great again? Really? And let's hear a bit of the confirming summary of how one tentacle of the vampire squid keeps its choking grip around the throat of a nation, defeating sovereignty and the people that government was to protect, because master not a debtor be. How the U.S. locked in Latin America's economic dependency. The new global order, folks. Really? You think so? Sound familiar? Modern debt mechanisms serve as instruments of neocolonialism in Latin America, bringing regional countries into U.S. sphere of influence. Alejandro Olmos Gaona, an Argentine expert of external debt and former member of Ecuador's government commission for auditing bilateral agreements, tells Sputnik. The turning point came when the United States changed its legislation in the mid-1970s as loans began flowing into Latin America. And remember, that was when the Nixon decoupled the dollar from the gold completely, removing the gold in 1971, unleashing the devil, as it were, upon the world. New norms allowed states to be sued under U.S. jurisdiction through the so-called Sovereign Immunities Act. Now countries relegated to states, no longer sovereign nations. Argentina, under its military dictatorship, was the first country to reform its laws to permit the transfer of jurisdiction to foreign courts. Quote, from that moment on, virtually all Latin America countries began contracting loans and issuing bonds under conditions dictated by Washington, close quote, he states. The IMF plays the central role part in the scheme, Kawana highlights. The IMF has one critical feature. It can inflict damage on any country through its operations. It not only dictates economic policy and monitors state actions, but also cannot be brought to a court anywhere in the world, close quote. International Center for Settlement of Investment Disputes, established in 1966, is the world's leading institution devoted to international investment dispute settlement. It also plays an important role in neocolonial processes, the expert adds. ICSID is linked to the World Bank. Through bilateral investments and agreements, investors can bring disputes against states to this arbitration body. Unlike ordinary courts, ICSID tribunals consist of three arbitrators whose decisions are final and cannot be appealed. Again, master not a debtor be. Typically, they are lawyer representing the interests of large corporations. And you didn't think the Occupying Bar Association, its members, and a judicial branch of government near you isn't an integral parasitic vampiric agent? Quote, the system is fully engineered, he adds. That's the money quote. The system is fully engineered, he adds. The result of such actions is deliberately constructed legal architect designed to control economies and rule in favor of creditors in any conflict, Goana concludes. While the ICSID is for internal dispute settlements, the Bank of International Settlements, established in 1930, serves as the bank for central banks, whose primary goal is to support global financial stability and provide banking services exclusively to central banks and other international organizations, sounding like we've located the vampire squid's lair, or very nearly, and to where the BIS, these countries subject their central banks globally, from where an economic hitman likely lurks, to ensure compliance, or where the likes of a Donald sanctionsmonious Trump comes a-calling. The BIS also works on projects that support central banks in adapting the new challenges, including digital innovation in payments. Sound familiar? To tokenize everything, even you, whether or not directly or through third-party or third-party obligations or proclivities, right? And it's gone, tether types? You see how Russia's not getting away from this, folks? It's a global construction. They can talk about going somewhere. They can say they ain't going to eat the bugs. And that's going to be the big battle. Don't you see it? Eat the bugs. No. Eat the bugs. No. You're going to be part of the global system. Eat the bugs. Okay. Give me a cricket. I got lots of crickets. And as if on concerted cue, or is that trust the plan, the letter Q? Neustis represents a thumbnail of the method of a vampire squid's life-draining processes as the neocolonial canard takes center stage. Egyptian party leaders blows open the neocolonial formula to loot developing nations. Major powers seize the resources of developing countries using the leverage to force them into borrowing from international institutions, which then impose crippling economic policies. The head of Egypt's National Conciliation Party, Mohammed Mahmoud Rifaat, tells Sputnik, the scheme works like this. The key world powers use various tools to strangle the development of others and disrupt their progress, aiming to turn them into debtor states. This drives them to turn to global entities like the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. These institutions provide money but simultaneously seize control over the economies of those seeking help. Another way of gaining control is freezing sovereign assets, a key foundation upon which any economy is built. This not only leads to economic collapse, but also sparks tensions and even military conflicts. Such measures allow neocolonial powers to appropriate the resources of others and use that to force other states to follow their lead. This sort of policy, quote, constitutes an act of aggression against the states and peoples requiring active measures to restore their rights, close quote, the expert says. And what have I said? This is not a spectator sport around here. Constitutes an act of aggression against states and peoples requiring active measures to restore their rights. They're not going to be gave to you. That's why you got to fight for whatever rights you saw prior to the occupation. Another problem he points out is the United Nations, which is not viable today, as it can't represent the world apart from via the General Assembly. That said, some countries do help developing nations, Mahmoud Riafat notes, with Russia serving as an example. Quote, Russia provides support to the world through participation in construction and development processes, as well as through training personnel in partner countries, which contributes to building the capacity for independent development and achieving sustainable growth, he explains. So you're hearing all those words towards a global transformation, capacity building to sustainable development growth. So it's confirmed again, Russia is a globalista change agent playing a good cop, bad cop scenario. You could put your resources in this multipolar sustainable development basket of currency for the southern global equality, or do you want to deal with the Western neocolonizing resource plunderers over there? And I guess that's an offer you can't refuse, right? And that's what's being presented in the world at this point. It ends up going to the same end. And I've explained the importance of mineral production in America, and I've explained the special nature of mineral disposals and the laws of which obstruct this global looting. And I told you long back that they would be moving in this direction and controlling the production of, let's say, Africa is the most clearest object in my mind I could see here, and it was changing really amount of minerals, which turns into production as well. And also operate as a checklist to identify felony theft, extortion, you know, of civil rights that I talk about, 42 SC 1981, it's in the law, or coercion. As well, I've explained the very special relationship between those valuable mineral disposals and the government grantor to the locators of those minerals, which is unique in the world, and it's to be protected. If we're going to look at the rule of law, it's to be protected in the first instance. So here we have a confirmation of that in this article, together with the evidence of the failure to meet its obligations and duties to its valuable mineral locators, the monetary system of honest money based upon those locations, in particular gold and silver extraction, and protection of both at home. U.S. and Canada sources gold from drug cartel mines. Mints in both countries receive the metal from a North American contractor who mixes dirty gold with domestic supplies, the investigation claims. The U.S. and Canadian government mints have for years sourced gold coin from mines controlled by Colombia's Clan del Golfo drug cartel, despite vowing that all precious metals is extracted on domestic soil, according to investigation by the New York Times. The United States Mint says its coins are produced, quote, to connect to the founding principles of our nation, close quote, and federal law requires its gold to be sourced domestically. So it's to connect the founding principles of our nation. Note, that's founding principles, not fiat. However, the process is, quote, based on a lie, the NYT wrote. The newspaper said it traced hundreds of millions of dollars worth of foreign gold entering the mint's supply chain. Some of the metal was secondhand and of unknown origin, while some came from countries such as Colombia and Nicaragua, where parts of the gold industry are controlled by criminal groups. Criminal groups aside, government is the biggest one. That leaves the homegrown gold producer where? How many millions of dollars of wealth is stolen from the local gold producers in this country that the government is not jealously protecting its grantees from that depredation? Why does the United States government attack its valuable mineral producers as well? Why didn't Trump answer during Trump 1 any one of the 4 certified letters sent to the White House by Jefferson Mining District, whose mission is to, and the letters sought to, protect all producers, all of them, not just the mineral producers, can't mean that the United States government or Trump intended to encourage, protect, or fulfill the founding principles of our nation. Some of the gold originates in northwestern Colombia, where large areas are controlled by the clan Del Golfo. Miners there extract gold using mercury, a toxic substance that harms both workers and the environment. But mercury is not necessarily the problem. It's how mercury is handled, and updated retorts for proper capture and recycle, for one, would answer a lot of that. In fact, I designed one that my father fabricated the model for when I was 10. So doing this stuff shouldn't be that hard. The NYT said the illegal operation is being carried out with such cavalier disregard of the authorities that some workers were seen extracting gold on the premise of a military base. Then the Colombian gold is shipped to Dillon Gage, a Texas-based refiner and one of the main suppliers of the U.S. Mint. The company blends it with the American gold, effectively laundering it, the investigation claims. The U.S. Mint does not check the origins of the gold, NYT added. When asked about the sourcing, the Mint initially told the NYT that, quote, its gold came entirely from the United States, and as the law requires, close quote. However, when presented with the findings, the body backpedaled, saying that the U.S. was its primary source of the metal. So backpedaling as well then on the founding, not fiat, but backpedaling on the founding principles of our nation, don't you know? And a number of trust breaches. The supply chain then extends further north to Canada, the paper said. While the U.S. Mint did not verify the origin of gold, its Canadian counterpart had vetting procedures in place, but continued procurement nonetheless, according to the NYT. Canadian officials described the gold as, quote, North American, close quote, arguing that the designation reflects the fact that it's mixed in Texas. This classification means that authorities are not required to verify the original source of the metal and instead rely on U.S. checks, the report said. The NYT added that even if the Canadian Mint did not follow its own guidelines, quote, it would face no legal consequences, close quote, because tinkering with the, quote, North American, close quote, designation is not a crime. Well, maybe not. But this is not merely a statutory U.S. code obligation. It's the United States government that has been brought into a trust breach by foreign instrumentalities by and through such terminological manipulation. The investigation comes as gold has been on an extended record-breaking rally in recent years, largely due to aggressive central bank buying, U.S. Federal Reserve rate cuts, and geopolitical tensions. So let us add to the word salad currency debasement by fiat. It's also at a time that real wealth generation would help Americans if Trump were really interested in more than a deceptive campaign slogan to make America great again. What, like back to those founding principles of our nation? And instead would fight, insisting on those founding principles of our nation? An educated America would be much better off. But more than WWF Showtime presentation, Trump doesn't and won't fight for Americans or its hardworking producers. And it won't help the miners at home produce those minerals, but they know exactly where and when in the world to invest in foreign countries and to not lift a finger, not break a fingernail, to billions in profit. Trump's sons claim share in mining groups supported by U.S. government. The company secured up to $1.6 billion Bravo dollars from Washington last year to extract tungsten in Kazakhstan, the news outlet has said. A shell company, backed by Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump, has agreed to a merger with a mining group that secured up to $1.6 billion from the United States government in 2025 to facilitate the extraction of tungsten in Kazakhstan, the Financial Times has reported. The agreement between Skyline Builders Group, in which United States President Donald Trump's son holds a stake, and Kov Kaz Capital Group was signed on Thursday. The newly formed entity will trade on NASDAQ as Kaz Resources, according to the statement. Kov Kaz currently controls 70% of the northern Katpar and upper Karatke tungsten deposits in central Kazakhstan, believed to be one of the largest in the world. Last year, the federally funded U.S. Export-Import Bank and Development Finance Corporation committed to invest heavily in the development of both projects. They didn't turn that attention back in for the miners at home, did they? statement didn't mention Trump's son by the FT report on Friday, citing informed sources that they bought into Skyline last August via a special purpose vehicle run by the subsidiary of Dominary Securities. The size of their investment was not disclosed, but they increased it by $24 million, Mike dollars, in October. The paper stressed that, quote, there is no suggestion that Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump knew the Cove was on the cusp of securing a contract from their father's U.S. administration when they made their initial investment in Skyline, or that they influenced the awarding of the contract, close quote. You're not supposed to do your due diligence, folks? American Ventures, of which Dominary is a member, said that Donald Trump Jr., quote, has no operational involvement in the company, close quote, and, quote, does not interface with the federal government on behalf of any company he invests in, close quote. Eric Trump didn't respond to a request for comment from the FT. American Ventures, to rule over, to dominate, or to exercise sovereignty. Dominary. The Democrats have repeatedly sounded alarm over potential conflicts of interest arising from investments by Trump's family members in companies that have secured lucrative contracts. They didn't say much about Hillary Clinton and Oregon One that turns into Uranium One, did they? Nope, won't hear that either. But anyway, doesn't matter. That was in my backyard, wasn't it? Yep, we were right on that one. Jefferson Mining District. The president's... Will we get anything from Trump? No, not going to hear it. The president's kin made more than $1 billion, bravo dollars, in pre-tax profits last year by getting involved in cryptocurrency, AI, drones, and critical minerals projects. I can tell you I know quite a few critical minerals miners, and none of them are contacted by the military or the government, and they've been communicating with them. Due to its high heat resistance and hardness, tungsten is essential in the production of aerospace and defense equipment. The U.S. currently has no active mines producing the metal and is highly dependent on China for its deliveries. Yeah, sure. Did my listen hear about that investment given an opportunity to profit from it like the Trump sons did? Or was it only the Just Us insiders given the heads up to find Waldo? And about those no active mines, that's a Trump self-inflicted wound. Now, I've been told of deposits that exist in America that the United States government has declared it needs immediately, that it either ignores or attacks the locator in favor of these foreign engagements. And notice that the exploitation produces nothing but paper value, equity, what the Trumps deal in. Never any dirt under the fingernail. No actual domestic production. China, however, produces, keeps, and controls the actual minerals. So who is winning that race? How has that been working for the United States? And either way, being no other country I know of other than the United States disposes the land and valuable minerals to locator either country, China or the U.S., as the Trumps under its protection and other insiders are going to exploit peoples in other countries. Because that exploitation, that domination or sovereignty of the valuable mineral land disposed to the locator can't be done in America pursuant to the land disposal laws of the United States and its governmental obligations and duties to its grants, turning those foreign people into production slaves, preying on their impaired lifestyle for a profit. And all the disposed soil is of a sovereign nature in America, being evidenced in every land patent. But Trump won't protect it like he won't advocate and accomplish reestablishing sound money. And the two are essentially tied together, gold and silver money, land and the threat to life and limb, or the effort to dig for them and produce them. It's why I know and knew Trump wasn't going to make America great again once he made it clear his campaign pledges were not going to be fulfilled. And then, those intelligent enough to see the charade and failure he calls stupid losers, essentially projections are of himself. If he were intelligent enough, I wouldn't be explaining this today. We would be transitioning from an exploitative, fraudulent, debt-based society driven by speculation to a wealth-driven, productive society, again, that wouldn't allow the Trumps to exploit foreign people through equity investments in far-off lands. If production was the aim, those investments, but without the domination, could be had here at home if Trump believed in America and the American people more than Israel or opportunistic global predation for their billionaire boys and his family. The only legacy he appears interested in, while bringing on perpetual tracked and traced AI and enhanced servitude to America. As we read, the U.S. debt now exceeds the size of the economy for the first time since the end of World War II. The U.S. national debt exceeded the size of the country's economy at the end of March for the first time since the end of World War II. Is that 11, Representative Omar? World War 11? Yeah, thank you. Thank you for clarifying that. Fox Business reported, citing data released by the Bureau of Economic Analysis. Let me also offer, economics is not production. Economic development does not fit in with production. And I've talked to you about that before and proved it. Economic development monies will not flow to production uses to help. The Bureau reportedly estimated on Thursday that national debt held by public amounted to $31.27 trillion Tango dollars as of March 31st. The GDP at the time was estimated at $31.22 Tango trillion dollars, meaning the U.S. national debt exceeded 100% of the country's economy. Last time such a situation was observed in 1946, when the percentage of public debt to GDP was 106%, the report read. So that's interesting. It was explained a few years ago. I think it was during Obama, wasn't it, when I reported on that? Master, not a debtor be, debt-driven system. The GDP, the value of the economy, we were told, was what the country produced, including the public debt. So think about that. How then can U.S. national debt exceed 100% of the country's economy? Is how the wool is held over your eyes as you are fleeced generation after future generation, and none call it treason. On Thursday, Fitch Ratings suggested the U.S. national debt under its baseline scenario would exceed 120% of GDP no later than 2027. The U.S. public debt to GDP ratio was 116.6% in 2025, will reach 119.3% this year, and will increase 122% in 2027, the agency estimated. And 1946, we're coming out of a war. Right now, it looks like we're going into one. Think about that future. And what is the full faith and credit of the United States then, really? A license to impoverish the nation? And then, by extension, the world to profit a few? Or have I just exposed the purpose for establishing the United States of America? Then treat it like a future drug addict, incrementally bringing people into dependency for private profiteering, privateering, constitutionally protected. Go read it. Right there. Like the Trump insider heirs to the monarchy. Did you notice? This has been BTWRLM 666, and I'll be with you next week. Tech tips, or nature willing.
Echoes call the owl. Sunday, the clock strikes three, Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free, pull up a chair, lean in close, listens to learn, dose by dose, behind the woodshed, no stone unturned, Hal's words ignite, the airwaves burn, stand up, listen, it's time to learn, behind the woodshed. Hide a can of wood bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned, house words ignite, the airways burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. So mark the time when Sunday comes, behind the woodshed, beating drums. Beacon, fierce and bold, in the fight for truth. Next week, heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.